Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Manjit Singh to the broadcast. Manjit is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of The Clorox Company, a consumer packaged goods company with $6 billion in revenue. As Chief Information Officer, Manjit is responsible for the company's information technology organization and directing the company's strategic technology initiatives. He's also a member of the Clorox Executive Committee. Manjit joined Clorox in November of 2014, and prior to that, led the industry solutions group at Box Incorporated. Prior to Box, Manjit served as CIO of Las Vegas Sands and of Chiquita Brand International. He also is a regional chief information officer for Gillette in Singapore. Manjit received a Bachelor of Science degree in Mathematics and Computer Science from the State University of New York at Binghamton, and a Master of Science degree in Computer Science from Indiana University. I recently caught up with Manjit by phone from his office in Oakland, California, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Manjit discussed the importance of upgrading Clorox's skill mix by bringing in people with new skills and perspectives from both inside and outside the CPG industry. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Manjit highlighted IT's central position in Clorox and the ways in which they collaborate with various departments to connect dots and identify opportunities that others may have missed. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. Well, Manjit Singh, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to speak with you today. Manjit, I thought we'd begin with your company, Clorox. You are the Chief Information Officer of that company. And although I think it's a name that a lot of people know for a variety of reasons, especially given products that they may purchase that are part of your portfolio, I wonder if you could just take a quick moment and reintroduce the company for our listeners.
Sure. So Clorox is a global consumer packaged goods company. We operate in most countries around the world, selling a number of different large brands, including Brita water filters, Glad trash bags, Fresh Step cat litter, obviously our ubiquitous Clorox bleach product, etc. We are also in the personal care business with our Burt's Bees business, and most recently we purchased a probiotics business called Renew Life that's doing very well for us.
Excellent, thank you. And it's interesting. I know that Clorox has had a nice run, especially during the time you've been in role for 3.5 years, roughly. And you've been leading from your position as CIO quite a digital transformation, as you've talked to me in the past, first focusing on the external lens of digital and now moving towards the internal components of that. I wonder if you could give us an overview of each of those pathways.
Sure. So for the last couple of years, we've really been focused on improving our digital marketing capabilities. So the IT organization alongside the marketing organization have been busy building a platform and a capability for us to ensure that we understand our consumer journey and are there along the points in the journey where the consumer wants us to be, whether that's on mobile, whether that's in the web, or whether that's in store. And we are very pleased that we are seen as one of the leaders in the CPG business in our use of digital. When we took a step back and looked at what we've been able to achieve there and put plans in place to do even more, we also realized that there was an opportunity for us to take the same approach in some of our back office capabilities, specifically around our supply chain and our transactional environments. And it's essentially saying that if we want to be at the right place at the right time with the right product for our consumer, we have to make sure that our supply chain can match those opportunities, which today we're not necessarily geared to do as well because we're used to shipping large truckloads of pallet of product to our customers. which may or may not be the way that the consumer actually wants to receive our product. Though we would love everybody to have a truckload of Clorox products show up at their doorstep, they might actually just want a single item or a set of items. So we need to make sure that our supply chain is ready to be able to adapt to that changing world, which means it has to be much more agile than it is today and much more capable of predicting where products need to be and when they need to be at that location.
Very interesting. And I know one of the interesting complexities of your business, as you've begun to highlight, is this whole B2B2C nature of CPG and Clorox's business more specifically. But as a statistic, I believe I have noted correctly, 25% of your sales, net sales for Clorox flow through Walmart, roughly a quarter. But I know that now you're having more profound kind of end customer relationships and impact. And I wonder how you think about the difference between the consumer and the customer at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, as you said, our business traditionally has gone through traditional retail channels, and therefore we think of our customers as the Walmarts of the world, Costco's, Publix's, Safeway's, etc. And our consumer was the end purchaser and user of our product. And traditionally, we haven't had that direct of a channel to them. The world today allows us to have a direct relationship, whether that's through the marketing and communications mechanisms that I was describing earlier, or actually the ability for us to directly ship product to the consumer. We think that's very interesting, provides a lot of opportunities, not only for us, but actually also for our customers and our channel partners, which will continue to play a very important role in the future. So we are looking at figuring out how we can help Walmart do more with their e-commerce business and how they want suppliers like Clorox to work with them to improve their ecosystems there. As well, you know, we're growing with Amazon. Obviously, Amazon, doing a little bit of the reverse of Walmart, started off as a pure play e-commerce company and now is getting into bricks and mortar and retail through the acquisition of Whole Foods, plus potentially the Amazon Go stores. So we realize that we have to make sure that not only our internal capabilities are matched to both the customer and the consumer desires, but also ultimately our products are designed for flow through on both direct to the consumer, if that's the consumer's choice, or through the retail channels. And understanding some of that might be through traditional shelf displays, or perhaps the retailer themselves is just shipping the product direct to a consumer through an e-commerce channel as well. So we're getting ready for all of those different variations and feel like we're very well positioned for the future in that regard.
And how do you think about the consumer journey? You've talked a bit about the ways in which you engage them, the channels through which you do, but I wonder how you map that, how you engage consumers to understand the journey, and even how you think about ongoing engagement.
Great question. We actually spend a lot of time trying to understand the consumer journey. And as you can imagine, different consumers behave differently. And that could be an age demographic, that could be a gender demographic, et cetera. So we spend a lot of time talking to our consumers and listening to what our consumers have to tell us, whether it be through the traditional consumer panels that we utilize or listening through social media activities. And that allows us to build these consumer journey maps and understand again where the consumer wants us to be engaged and in what way. And our brands take those journey maps and then figure out what the implications are from an end product perspective or from a marketing perspective or potentially in a what going back to product, in a form factor perspective. Maybe you want a smaller package size versus a larger package size, again, depending on where we're intersecting on that consumer journey. As well, we also spend a lot of time talking to our consumers about trends in the marketplace and getting some feedback on what their reactions are to those trends. Do they want to engage in those trends? Do they believe that those trends are only for a subsegment of the population? So again, we can figure out what the right consumer journey map is for our given products and how we can be at the right place at the right time.
That's really great. And I know the company talks about total consumer value as a product experience times perception over price. And I wonder, what role does IT have in influencing the equation? Is it something you've thought about?
Definitely something we've thought about. And as you can imagine, we provide a lot of the underlying technology that allows us to collect the statistics so that we can input data into that equation. But more, we actually are involved in the entire cycle of product development and influencing the product development side, as well as influencing on the brand side through our engagement with marketing. So I like to think that the IT teams are involved in all elements of that equation, including price. If we can equip our sales teams with better pricing tools so that they can understand competitive dynamics in the marketplace, customer dynamics in the marketplace, that means we can price appropriately. And obviously that is the third element of that equation. So we are well positioned in that. What we have had to do is make sure that our IT teams spend more time getting closer to the business and actually understanding the dynamics of the business. So I encourage my organization to go out into the field, whether that's visiting customer teams on the ground, visiting our plant locations or our distribution centers, and really get immersed in what is the day-to-day like for those various groups so that we can better match what our technology capabilities are to what the business needs are, or for us to build connections because we sit at the center of everything that happens in the enterprise. We are uniquely positioned to connect dots amongst organizations that perhaps don't see those connections for themselves. And I think that is an exciting place to be inside the enterprise.
That's very interesting. And I through a lot of your answers, I'm imagining a lot of the data and analytics that are the inputs to so many of these decisions, but also the exhaust from a lot of the activities of the organization. Can you talk about the role that data and analytics play and how that's advancing?
Yeah, so data and analytics today is a very hot topic. You can't look around and not see or hear big data. I have a slightly different perspective on the big data journey everybody is on, because I believe that IT organizations have been collecting data, big, small, or otherwise, ever since the first computer came on. What we haven't done as great a job at is helping groups do the analytics around the data sets that matter to them. And what I find exciting about today's world of AI or machine learning is we no longer have to necessarily even know which data sets are going to be the most valuable. The systems can figure that out for themselves. So putting together all of the data that's collected in a single place to allow an AI algorithm to go crawl it is generating different outputs than having a more defined data set that that somebody believes is going to be valuable to them without understanding the other elements that could be added in. That's what's exciting about data and analytics today. And almost every time we engage with our business and show them the power of the analytics capabilities that we're building in the cloud, the power of mixing data sets and data sources, they always come away with a dramatic insight, and hopefully more than just one insight. And then they incorporate that into the day-to-day business. That's what's exciting to see. And the energy and excitement for data that the business has today is also very different than in the past. It wasn't about, hey, how can you get help me get more data sources or unique data sources. In the past, it was more of, hey, I need a system to go do X, Y, Z. Today, it is that asking us the question about, is there an interesting data set that we can get access to, and how do we integrate that into the existing data sets that we have?
That's great. And I know actually your team has also gotten very much involved in new product innovation. Can you talk about the ways in which you have done so?
Yeah, that's actually some of the most exciting work that we've done over the couple of years is for us to engage in the R&D side of our product development. An area where IT has historically inside Clorox never been engaged. So a few years ago, we partnered with the R&D function to bring our first Internet of Things product to market, which is the Brita Infinity Pitcher. It solves a well-known consumer issue of not knowing when to replace the filter. We provide you with stickers so they can put it down on your calendar, but most consumers forget to replace the filter on time. The Brita Infinity Pitcher is smart enough to measure your usage of the filter and will actually talk to Amazon and automatically reorder the filter for you so that you know it's time to change the filter when it arrives on your doorstep. That was exciting on multiple fronts. We as a company have not had experience with IoT, so it allowed us to have IoT experience. And as I mentioned, the IT organization usually has not been working hand in hand with the R&D organization on product development. From there, we've been pulled into a number of additional projects, some of which continue this thread of IoT enablement of products, but also in other areas where the question R&D is posing to us is, how can we use technology to help us do product packaging modeling? How can we use some predictive insights into labels and colors and everything else that goes on product package? So those are the level of engagements and types of engagements that we're now being pulled into very early on, versus in the past, it would be, oh, we found a technology solution to solve this problem. Can you please come and implement it? And that's just very exciting because it shows the power of how IT can add value across the entire enterprise. And again, in ways that perhaps have not necessarily been done before.
Very exciting. And, you know, as I think across our conversation, Manjeet, it strikes me there are a number of areas that you and your IT team are getting involved in that are very different from the average IT department. And I wonder to what extent across your 3.5 years, roughly, you've had to rethink the skill mix of IT in order to realize the vision that you're describing today, whether it's retraining people, existing staff, or bringing in new sorts of skills, either existing, you know, with new employees or in the broader ecosystem of vendor partners, to be able to realize this broad vision of innovation, customer-consumer engagement, and the like?
Definitely, it's been a mix of identifying existing resources or existing team members who have skill sets in the areas that we need to take us into the future. Sometimes you find that those skills exist in surprising places. It could be an individual who has done nothing but server operations their entire career, but understands the business side of supply chain as a result of the work that they've been doing for 20 plus years. And you realize that you have this hidden gem that that you can now move and leverage in different ways. As well, definitely there are also opportunities to bring in some outside thinking. And outside thinking comes for me in two different ways. One is outside thinking from a peer company, so a peer CPG company. Outside thinking also comes from those who come to our industry from a completely different industry, because they have a different perspective on how business should work, does work, and how IT needs to play a role and partner with the business. And it really forces us to think differently and approach things differently. As well, they help educate our business partners with that same kind of outside in thinking, if you will. So I believe there's always going to be this balance, but the more that you can tap into your existing resources who really intimately understand the business, understand the company culture, the more effective you will be, because company culture plays such an important role in driving innovation and driving change. Some cultures allow for fast-paced change. Some cultures are a little bit slower to adopt. And so you can have a brilliant idea, but if your approach on how to execute on that idea is in conflict with the culture, it will be that much more difficult for you to be able to have a successful execution. So finding those people inside your organization who know how to navigate the culture, know how to map this great innovation idea that you have to how the business operates, ends up being much more successful than somebody who doesn't understand the culture, doesn't understand the business practices, and just tries to bring this idea in. We have an initiative inside the company actually to help promote what we call growth culture. And growth culture is all about what I just mentioned, which is making sure that we're helping the company grow through innovation, through excellence in execution, and taking on new ideas, but doing it within the existing great culture that we have inside Clorox.
Really profound points about the role that culture plays in all of this. We've talked across the conversation about a variety of rising trends, but I wanted to sort of return back to that. As you look 2 or 3 years out, Manjeet, what are some of the trends that particularly excite you, and what are some of the ways in which they're starting to make their way onto your strategic roadmap?
Wow, there are several trends in the industry right now that are just exciting and revolutionary. And if I could tap into all of them, I would. First of all, obviously, artificial intelligence and machine learning and the advances in both of those capabilities are significant enablers in the future. And you just see that continuing to get more and more refined. We were having conversations with Google recently around how you can apply AI across sectors versus just being domain specific, as it has been focused in the past. That's tremendously exciting. We, over the past couple of years, have been on an agile and DevOps journey, and there again, the capabilities are so much more advanced than they were a couple of years ago. The understanding of what it means to be agile has evolved. So that's another trend that I'm very, very excited about. We talked about IoT, and if you start thinking about IoT, not just from the product side, but again, across the enterprise, there are things that you can do with IoT to help automate the working of facilities, the working of employee movements, et cetera, that we haven't had the opportunity to leverage before, that are going to be applied in ways we probably can't even think of today to bring us into the future. The last one is actually something that arguably we've been doing for the last 10 to 15 years, but it just continues to get better and better. And that's all about connectivity. The ability for us to work globally at any time, in any place, is just so fantastic as an enabler. And it has gotten so much better over the years. You and I are talking through one of the new video conferencing services that are out there, taking video conferencing to the next level and truly, truly making it work consistently across the globe is also going to be a game changer, because it means our teams no longer need to be physically located close to one another. Time zones are going to continue to melt away. And that means we get to tap into knowledge and skill sets that we might have more difficulty tapping into today. And in the future, it'll just be truly be seamless. I sound like a futurist at this point, but I truly believe that we are getting to the point where the world is going to be so tightly interconnected. You're not going to be thinking about whether or not the person you're talking to is on the other coast in the United States, but you're going to be wondering whether or not they're in a different part of the world, or if they're currently surfing on the beach as they're having a conversation with you.
A very exciting vision of the future, to say the least. Well, Manjeet Singh, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a really great conversation.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed being a part of it, and thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Brad Strock, the Chief Information Officer of PayPal.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.